Adversity, bring it. The struggle, I welcome it. Snooze on life, never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 175. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Chris Rincon James. We have Claudio, the voice, Valenzuela. And I am Dave, the body,
hey.
Regina. Chris James is an award-winning journalist and producer who's worked for both ABC and CNN, creating long-form feature stories and narrative-driven content. His work received the 2018 Editor and Publishers Epi Award for a news feature that closely documented the Kilauea volcano eruption in Hawaii. James spent 7 years at ABC News, serving in production roles on Nightline and Good Morning America. As a producer for Nightline, he received 3 Emmy nominations. Some of his most notable work includes over 70 hours filming and conducting interviews inside New York City's Rikers Island Jail as co-producer of Diane Sawyer's A Hidden America, which garnered over 50 million views on YouTube. His most recent work includes producing 2 new series for Apple TV, Messi's World Cup, The Rise of a Legend, which is a 4-episode docuseries about Lionel Messi, and The Dynasty, a 10-episode docuseries about the New England Patriots and the rise of legendary Tom Brady. Chris James, welcome to the podcast, my brother.
So happy to be here. Yeah.
So listen, man, we got to be transparent and tell everybody kind of how that nickname came about.
Yeah.
Right. So it all started on vacation.
It did.
And ironically, we were in Rincon, Puerto Rico, and we had a wonderful time. We met on the beach. Fast forward, I think from that moment, we spent every waking moment on the vacation.
By the way, though, you forget, we actually met at the airport at 4 a.m. So we landed.
Oh, we took a car together.
Yeah, we landed at the airport. I thought that this was a regular airport. You get there, there's a line of cabs.
You're so
you
right.
get in one, you get to your Airbnb. I get there, I have no idea how I'm going to leave. So I saw you, or I think I found a driver, and he said, oh, we're waiting on 2 other people. So I was like, all right, cool. So I get in the car, and then you walked in.
Bernie was the driver.
Bernie, yes,
Bernie.
Yeah. So we met in Bernie's car at 4 a.m., like really like exhausted.
Yes.
And I think, we just started talking, and then we didn't exchange numbers or anything. It was just like, see you when I see you. And then the next day we saw each other on the beach.
On the beach. Yeah. And I remember before I knew your last name, I saved you in my phone as Chris Rincon.
I love that.
So that's how it came, man. Listen. I mean, I know this stuff about you, but this is an impressive, impressive bio.
Thank you.
How does it feel when somebody reads that back to you?
Well, this is the first time I've ever had that experience. But it makes me feel proud. I've been really blessed in my career. I've had incredible opportunities, and I've always wanted to tell people stories. It's something that I've really been passionate about since a young age. Mm-hmm. I've always been really curious. I've always been just inspired by people's real stories.
Right.
So the fact that I get to do that for a living is something that I don't take for granted.
Yeah, dude. Very impressive. And I can't wait to dive all over the place here. I'd be remiss, though, if we don't talk about the day of recording.
Yeah.
Happens to be the final day of January. I've been doing dry January. And before I started, I connected with Chris, or maybe I had just started it or something.
Yeah, you posted saying I'm thinking about doing it. And then I was, I was really on board with it.
Yes. Yeah. So for me at first, and I was open about this too, like there was this social anxiety piece to not drinking. My mom's been sober 5+ years. I literally shout her out every episode because she's a hero to me and I'm so proud of her. But at first I really didn't feel any difference. But I think over the course of the month, I was looking at a before and after picture. It's alarming. Seriously.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't realize, I never drank every day.
Right.
Ever. But on the weekends, your boy could put down a couple, as you know. And I think if you were to add that up, even if you have seven drinks in one night on a Saturday, that's basically one drink a day.
Yeah.
So limiting all those drinks, I think from a physical standpoint, definitely has been great. But from a mental clarity piece, mm-hmm. you know, I wake up in the morning and I'm a little bit more just aware and clear. And there's something to be said about waking up on a Sunday morning at 6 a.m. and just being alert. You did something even more incredible as we were talking, and I want you to share kind of how you got to that journey. You were a big proponent of Dry January. You started it last year, yep. and then you basically went the full year not drinking with no plans to really do so. Can you talk about that and I guess the benefits of Dry January and how it got you to here?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2022, I actually did Dry January as well. However, I only lasted the first 21 days. So I had a good friend's birthday party on the 21st of January, 2022. Mm-hmm. And at that party, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I did 21 days. Great. And I started drinking again. And I'm the same as you. I've never been somebody that drank every day. I've never been somebody that felt like I had a serious problem with drinking in the ways that I've seen other people have problems.
Right.
So I think I just told myself, well, this is normal. You know, you go out on the weekend and you get drunk, or you sometimes you don't even get drunk, but you have like four drinks.
Easy.
And the next morning you wake up and you do feel that, even if it's not like you're nauseous and you're really hungover, you do feel that level of like, I personally, like I get headaches. So I would get like a little bit of a headache in the morning after having like, let's say 3 to 4 drinks. Which I think I just kind of accepted as, well, that happens. That's life.
Yeah. And it lasts for a couple hours and then it eventually goes away.
Goes away.
Like, oh, it's fine.
Whatever. And I would like maybe take some Excedrin Extra Strength. Shout out to Excedrin. I kept that company in business because I always had it because I never knew when I was going to get a headache. So that's one example. So that was 2022. At the end of the year, I went away to Australia. So I was there for 3 weeks. And I just, you know, it was a glutton. I was eating, drinking, having fun, just having, you know, a blast. But I got back and I said, I'm doing Dry January for real this time. So I started it and it was hard at first, especially because of the social situations like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. In 2022, it was still kind of COVID-y. So we weren't going out as much. Mm-hmm. 2023, I was back to my regular social life.
I'm outside.
Yeah, well, I was outside big time. And I like to, you know, I'm an extrovert. I like to go out. I like to be with my friends. I like to go to events. So it was the first time I was really going to events, not drinking. And the first times you do it, it's really weird.
You're like,
yeah, it's weird. Just like, why? Like something feels off.
Yes.
Because we've been programmed in our heads. Event, party, whatever it is, celebration, yes. Drink, concert, drink. So the same thing happened. On the 21st of January, I had a really close friend's birthday. And it was a brunch. It was like
it the same birthday?
Same friends. Yeah.
That's going to happen every year now.
Exactly. So but this is 2023 now. Yeah. So I went, didn't drink. But then that night, this is actually kind of crazy. I won tickets on Sirius XM to go to a Drake show. And you know how big of a Drake fan I am.
Yeah.
So it's at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. It was incredible.
That's fire.
So I walk in. There's a huge premium open bar at a concert. They're serving, you know, Grey Goose, whatever you want. And I was with my husband and I looked at him and I was like, listen, like, come on. We have to drink. I mean, like, this is crazy. Like, let's have one night off. He's like, listen, we said we were going to do it. We said we were going to do the month. Let's do the month. So I was like, it was like a 3-minute period of me thinking, God, what? Like, this is weird. What's going on? Then I went to the bar, ordered a Diet Coke with lime, and I had the best night of my life. And that was such a turning point for me because I realized, oh, yeah, like this is a great concert. I don't need to have alcohol to enjoy myself at a concert. But it's a weird thing where we start to in our brains think that we need this thing to have fun. Mm-hmm. So that was a turning point where I thought to myself, oh, like, I feel like I'm onto something here. This is really interesting. And I started getting really curious about it. I started reading books about alcohol. I listened to the Andrew Huberman podcast, which is like
the GOAT.
Yeah. Which, that was like a game changer listening.
Is there a specific one?
Yeah. So if you just Google, you know, Andrew Huberman alcohol, he has I think it's almost 2-hour long podcast about the effects of alcohol. And it's things that truly I've never heard in my life.
Poison, literally.
It's literally poison. And it's like, and I'm not, listen, I get it. It's like drinking is really fun. But when you realize what it does to you, it's pretty unbelievable. Like what we've all accepted as normal.
Right.
As a society. So I just said to myself, all right, listen, like, let me do another month. So that's how it started. I was like, let me just try another month. And that's when I started to really see huge benefits.
After a month.
During the month, like I kind of felt crappy. I felt like pretty crappy.
At the beginning, I was over here in December.
Yeah.
And I remember talking on a podcast being like, you know, I'm getting the best sleep of my life. Remember, CV? I'm taking the magnesium and it's great. But I was drinking a lot. Then I stopped drinking and my sleep started to go to shit.
Yeah, my sleep, I couldn't sleep for like, when people don't talk about that. People say, oh, you stopped drinking and everything's great. It's like, actually... Yeah, I felt crappy. I felt really, really crappy. And it was February is when I started to realize I started to actually see changes. And I started to feel better. I started to feel like, oh, something feels like it's changing.
I got to do dry February.
But also the other thing I told myself is I'm not going to put a label on it. I'm not going to put a time stamp on it, but I am going to challenge myself to a month.
Right.
That's the one thing that I will do. And then at the end of February, I was like, all right, let me try March. And in March I went to Trinidad. So it was the first like real kind of vacation.
Is that like carnival? Well,
no, actually it wasn't a vacation. It was my granddad's funeral. He was 101 years old. He lived, in his home until the very end. He died peacefully in his sleep. So to me, that's like,
that's
the most iconic life. He's somebody who, didn't drink, went to bed early every night.
Damn, I thought you were going to,
I know. But I get there. And, you know, it's at funerals, we drink like any event, pretty much funeral, wedding, celebration, mourning, there's alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, OK, I'm not going to I said I was going to do March. Like, let me honor my granddad and stick to what I said I was going to do. But it was hard at first, too, because I felt like I was the only one not doing it. And as human beings, we want to fit in. We want to feel like we're part of the tribe. Mm. And when you're not doing something that everybody else is doing, it feels uncomfortable at first.
Right.
But I didn't. I just stuck to it. I got a Monster energy drink and stayed out till 5 a.m. dancing, because in Trinidad, we party, we rage.
Party. Let me ask you about that, though. And OK, so one thing I do notice is that on the weekends, though, I am more tired early.
Yes, I need like Red Bull. I need I love Celsius. Shout out to Celsius. But not as much Monster. In Trinidad, Monster is big in Trinidad, so that's why I had the Monster.
Take whatever you can get.
Take what I can get. But here's the thing: it's also having something in your hand.
Right.
You need to have something in your hand, and if it's a seltzer with lime, if it's if it's Coke, whatever it is, you have to have that. That you're with everybody else doing it. And even if it's not alcohol, it's like you still feel part of the crew.
Right.
You're not like sitting empty handed. So that's also a big thing, too. But after that trip, like I felt amazing. And I felt.
So that was 3 months now.
So that was now 3 months. And it was also, I'll never forget being at the airport heading back from Trinidad. Usually when I'm at the airport heading back from a trip, I feel like shit. And I'm just like sitting there, like not even hungover, but just kind of like depleted and empty and just kind of like depressed because you're getting on a plane. But I felt amazing. Like I was reading a book and I was just like, oh my God, this is like, that's when things started to like the wheel started to turn. And I was like, is this the ultimate life hack? Like, and I get back and, you know, I hit the ground running at work the next day. Usually, you know, after a trip, you have to wake up the next day. I felt great. Went to the gym. Like, and I was just thinking like, oh my God. So that's when I really started to think like, should I do the year? That's when I started to think, let me try to do the year. Let me do 2023, all of 2023.
Wow.
And I started to tell people, I started to say, you know, I think I'm going to do the year. And my husband said he was going to do it with me because he also now is feeling all these benefits. So
he's done it too.
He's done it too. We haven't drank.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's it. It's all it is. It's like every day you say, I'm just not going to drink. I'm not going to drink today. And I told you about this book I read called This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. That book was a game changer. After I read that book, I started to think, I don't want to. And that's what it's all about. It's for me at this point, like, I don't want to. But truly, if I changed my mind tonight and decided to drink, it would be fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with drinking. Mm-hmm. Like, it shouldn't be this thing that's, like, demonized. Like, oh, this is horrible. It's just like, yeah, like, I don't want to do it because I know what's going to happen. Like, I know I'm going to have a headache the next day. And it's like, I don't want to have a headache. So it's, like, very simple. It's actually become very simplified for me. And the benefits have been undeniable. And I've talked to friends who've also stopped drinking, and we all kind of talk about how it's kind of like a life hack, which is a weird way to think about it. But it's like, it makes life easier.
I mean, the more and more people that I talk to, they say the same things. Yeah. We had a recent guest on, Vin Maselli.
Yeah.
And he's been sober 13 years.
Wow.
And he basically started with like a dry January challenge that turned into him basically giving himself grace the following, I guess, the remainder of the year and saying, you know what, I'm going to allow myself to drink one day a month.
Yeah.
And then out of the 11 remaining days that he had, he only drank five times.
Interesting.
So he was like, five times, he's like, I'm just going to abolish it. So then right. the following year is actually when he then started his journey. And I thought that was such a profound way to
That's
like,
a cool way, yeah.
you know, you're giving yourself grace. You're like, well, yeah. I'm going to drink, you know, 12 days out of the yeah. year, holidays, birthdays, whatever it is. And then from there, if you really... Because even if you could do that, that's
yeah.
impressive
Yeah.
to me. You know what I mean? I was drinking pretty much every weekend, at least a drink.
Oh, me too.
You yeah. know what I mean?
Since I was probably since I was like 16, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. No, man, very, very interesting. And for whatever reason, it's been, I started to vocalize this because I knew I wanted it.
You yeah.
know? Like I started yeah. to talk about it with CV. He doesn't really drink either.
Yeah.
And obviously I see the growth of my mom yeah. and the clarity yeah. that she has. She's hilarious though. Every time she sees me, she's like, I have so much clarity. I'm like, I know, mom, it's been 5 years.
That's one thing I will say. You have to be, I've noticed being careful about it. And I only talk about it when someone asks me.
Right.
Because you never want to be that person who's preaching.
Yes.
And when I was drinking, like I didn't want people talking to me about not right. drinking. And I used to be one of those people who like, I felt bad for people who didn't drink. And I was like, oh, something really horrible must have happened to you. You must have crashed your car into a ditch or something. Like, that's truly
you
how...
You got a DWI.
Yeah, like, I thought when someone didn't drink, like, I almost thought there like it was weird. Right. I was like, oh, like, is that, like, what mm-hmm. happened there? Like, oh, shit, like, something bad must happen. Because yeah, yeah. in my mind, I was just like, it must be so sad to
right.
not drink.
Right.
Like, that's truly...
You couldn't even see it.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, it means that you're an alcoholic or, mm-hmm. like, you know, something's wrong with you or... wow, like that must really be a lot of, you know, take so much self-determination and mm-hmm. take so much work to like be at a party and be around all this alcohol right, and not right. drink. And now I see, my mindset has been completely shifted where now I'm just like, it's not a temptation. Mm-hmm. I could do it if I wanted to in a second and it would be fine. Like it wouldn't be a
right,
big
right.
deal.
You're like, not going to sit there and be like, right. oh my God, please forgive me for my sin.
Yeah, no, it'll be no. fine. It'll be fine. And it's like, I'm not like counting mm-hmm. days. I'm not like, you know, oh, I'm like, you know, I don't think in that sense.
See, my battle know? Now, and I was talking to CV about this, is I do enjoy... You know, a casual scotch,
and
like because I like yeah. the taste of it. I like yeah. the notes. I've studied this stuff. I'm a big fan of Macallan.
Yeah.
Like I like it, and I like a glass of red wine here and there. You know, but that's very different than how I was drinking.
Absolutely.
So if I could find that balance, or if I could just about, I don't really know what direction.
It's
what, I'm going.
But it's weird. It's whatever you know. Want. To, it's truly whatever you want to do. So if it is having yeah. a scotch every now and then, great.
Right.
Because it's not the way maybe it was before mm-hmm. where we're in Rincon and we're slamming shots and we're, you know, I'm standing on top of the bar. Like, you know,
what a vibe.
I mean, listen, and that was fun. Like, I actually don't even regret any of that stuff. But now looking back, I'm like, you know what? Like, I remember like waking up the next day feeling like absolute dog
well,
shit.
Well, but then we just did it again.
And then,
so.
But because you, yeah, that's the thing. And like,
it's the life hack.
That's the remedy. That's the life hack there is we just start over again.
Right.
Maybe
right.
a little bit like an hour earlier.
Right. Whereas the life hack here is like you don't drink one day and then you life hack and don't drink the next
right,
day.
Right. Yeah. yeah.
you know,
exactly.
That's very ironic. No, thank yeah. you for sharing, man. And yeah. and from a physical standpoint, I mean, I don't know if you could tell yourself because it's hard to like, you know, unless you're really looking at pictures, but
yeah.
you know, if I go, weeks, a couple months of not yeah. seeing you, like even on Instagram. And yeah. then when you post something, I'm like, damn, this dude is shredded. What's the workout routine?
Dude, thank
like?
You. I appreciate it. So F45 has changed my life, truly.
Is it the structure of it?
Yeah.
Is it the style of the workout? Is it everything? What is it?
It's everything. It's the structure. It's the style of the workout. It's the coaches. It's the community. It's the fact that I have to show up at 7:40, 8:30, whatever. Mm-hmm. I like to in the morning. But if you don't show up, if you don't show up, like basically you have an hour window where you can cancel it for free. But if you don't, you get charged $15. And that alone,
oh, damn,
that alone,
I'm going.
I'm not yeah. going to. And then, you know, an hour before, you're not going to cancel. It's something that you decide, for me at least, I would decide not to go to the gym like a few minutes before. I'd be like, you know, fuck it. Like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this today. But I show up and now I love it. Now I'm really into it. And I really do credit the not drinking, because I would get like these like little headaches in the morning, even after having like sometimes even two drinks. And I would not be going to the gym. I would be going to get a bagel, bacon, egg and cheese. Like, you know, I would be hashed, whatever right. it is. So that alone has been great. And yeah, and just like I've noticed that with eating now, I'm definitely eating a bit less. Just not, I'm not eating as much as I used to. So those are, yeah, but if I, you know, I sound like a salesperson, but I think F45 is really great.
No, I think people should look into it. And I think that style of like fitness in general, that community aspect, the boot camp style, you know, you're super setting, but you get it all in a short period of time. And people's time is the most important thing in the world. So it's a 45 minute workout, right?
45 minutes. Yeah. And on Saturdays, it's an hour, which is kind of nice because then it's, you know, you're really like starting your Saturday off right.
Yep.
I'm like, all right, let's hit it. Mm-hmm. And you feel great. You feel good.
So complete shift here.
Yeah, yeah.
But so we're the same age,
yep.
right? And ironically, we grew up one city away from each other.
It's insane.
Right? New Rochelle's a city?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mount Vernon.
Literally. Next door.
So next door.
Yeah.
Same age. We're months apart.
It's insane.
So I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York. You're New Rochelle, New York. Yep. What was like the family environment growing up? Tell me a little bit about that.
I had an incredible childhood. So my parents both worked in healthcare. My mom's a nurse. My dad worked, he still works in radiology. So he's an x-ray tech and he's the CAT scan tech. So
married?
So they split up last year, were married for about 34 years. And yeah, growing up, I mean, I had a really, I had a really good community as well around me. You know, I had great friends. I was given a lot of support. I had an amazing babysitter. My mom was out the door to work at 7 a.m. My dad was out to work really early, too. So I had a babysitter who was there for me every step of the way. She actually lives in Mount Vernon. Wow. Shout out to Elise. She's like a second mother to me. So I always felt very supported. And I was the oldest of three boys. So I have two younger brothers who were amazing. And I think growing up with siblings, you learn from a young age, like how to share. You learn how to just interact with other people. So it's like. Like, I remember when I was 5 years old, my youngest brother was born. It's like, I have that memory of like meeting him for the first time.
Right, right.
So I'm grateful for all that. Yeah, and I grew up going to Catholic school in Larchmont, St. John and Paul School.
Used to play them in basketball.
Yeah, SJP.
I was St. Peter and Paul.
Oh, wow. I was on the basketball team. I sucked. So I probably didn't get much time. I know. And it was funny because I was like the only black kid. We were like truly the only black family. My mom's white. My dad's black. But... it was like a very predominantly white school. Mm-hmm. So people would always be like, oh, I bet you're really good at basketball, huh? And I'm like, actually, not so much. But yeah, it was a great, but I did have a great experience there for kindergarten through eighth grade. And then I went to Iona Prep ninth grade and 10th grade. Mm-hmm. Did not have a great experience there. And then transferred to New Rochelle High School for 11th grade and 12th grade, which I absolutely loved. Mm. And so I had a growing up in New Rochelle is like, and Mount just Westchester County. Yep, and, yep. and you know, it's, you have access to so much and you're so close to the city. And you have, just, you know, it's a great place to grow up. Mm-hmm. So I feel grateful for a lot
of
that.
Yeah. I'm so interested, man, with this proximity. It's crazy now that I'm actually, it's just hitting me for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, that was so close.
I know.
I can't even believe it.
I bet we were at the same house party or something.
Oh, there had to be something.
Something Absolutely. At some point.
We have our ACE Summit coming up. Action Cultivates Excellence. It's a men's personal and professional development summit. It's a three-day experience, February 16th to 18th, New Paltz, New York, and we're inviting 25 men who are looking to level up their lives. We'll be doing guided cold plunges, leadership training, breath work, group workouts, expert-led workshops, and a keynote from the Yankee legend, Joe Girardi. There's something to be said about surrounding yourself with 25 like-minded men. This is about building a community, fellowship, and a brotherhood. So whether you're looking to grow in business, your fitness, your relationships, or simply develop new lifestyle habits, this retreat is for you. It doesn't matter if you've made mistakes in the past, or you haven't been able to commit, or you're telling yourself you're not worthy. Let me tell you this. This is a new year. 2024, you are worthy. You're supposed to be here. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself. We all have a thought of what being a man in today's society is. And yes, it's a strong provider and a protector. But real strength lies in vulnerability. We're looking to bridge the gap between masculinity and vulnerability and bring out the absolute best in each and every one of you. AceSanctuary.com for tickets. We will see you there.
So you shared that you have a husband, openly gay.
Yeah, of course.
Now, was this a challenge growing up? And the reason why I ask is, so one of my roommates in college ended up coming out after college.
Yeah.
And I remember when I found out, and this is one of my best friends, even to this day, there's distance between us just because of the geographical locations, but he'll always be a brother to me. So I remember calling him and being like, yo, man, I just want to apologize to you. And he said, for what? And I said, I did whatever to make you not comfortable enough to come out to me as your roommate in college. And he said, Dave,
yeah,
I was a basketball player. I'm from down south. There was no way that I was coming out in college. Like, he had to move and like start a whole new life. And he's living his best life now. But to me, that's a really, it's hard to think about.
Yeah.
Because you must battle for him, you know, for such a long period of time, wanting to be your true self and not being able to do that. When did you come out and how did you, I guess, get comfortable with that space?
Yeah. And it's funny because I just said I had a great childhood and I did. But then I also think about the reality that I knew that I was different. I knew that I was different from, you know, my friends, the other boys.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Were you born this way?
Yeah, I absolutely believe you're born
my
this way.
My boy.
Yeah, yeah.
He said,
shout out Lady Gaga.
He basically said to me, Dave, who would choose this? Well, you know what I mean? Like, who would choose this when it's going completely against what the societal norm is?
100%.
I think now we're getting much better in society.
100%.
Which is a blessing.
Thank God. Yeah.
And, you know, I know people have their views and stuff, but people deserve to be happy.
Yeah.
And whether you're...
Who cares?
You know, the only thing I will say, and this is a controversial topic, but as a father now and having a 3.5-year-old girl, I'm not... I do think that anybody should step into what they're comfortable with. But like for me as a grown man now at 34 to just say, oh, I identify as a woman and I have what I have and I go into a women's bathroom. That's the only piece for me that I'm not I'm not really comfortable with because of my daughter.
Right. The good thing is I think that is so rare.
100%.
I think when people are in terms of the trans issue, when people are trans, that is something also born this way.
Right.
They've known their whole lives that they're in the wrong body. Mm-hmm. They're born in the wrong body. And it's, you know, you're also, you look at some of the suicide rates of people who are trans. It's unbelievably high.
Right.
And this is saving their, like my trans friends who have transitioned, like this has saved their life.
Mm.
If they don't do this, they might not be here.
Right.
So that's, I think, of course, there's, you know, there's gradients to everything. There's always the exception to the rule. There's always... You know, I think sometimes we hear about like the really controversial thing when it's like trans people don't care. They're like, I don't give a like, I just want just like let me live my life and be happy. And I'm like, God bless. Like, I think everybody should do what they need to do. But back to from my story. Yeah. Like I knew. Yeah, I for sure knew as a kid. Like I remember I went to go see Titanic with my mom. So that was
like my favorite movie.
Yeah, it's an incredible movie. But I went. It was like 1997, I believe. So, yeah, I was like 7.
Yeah.
And I remember afterwards because there was like that scene where, you know, Kate Winslet is being she's like naked.
Rose.
Yeah. Well, no, I was like, but I remember afterwards my mom was like, oh, she asked me a question about like, oh, did you think she was like I, something about her, and I was thinking like I was looking at Leo, remember that.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
I also had like crushes on girls, relationships with girls, and like infatuations and stuff like that through high school. And I just was really, your mind is powerful, so I was able to say to myself like, "You're not, don't like this is going away. Like, just don't address it, don't think about it, and don't give it any sort of oxygen." And I didn't really at all. Like I never had any sort of like, you know, hookups with guys or it was even like came close to that really. Mm-hmm. And then even going into college, like I didn't come out until after college. And I think about that sometimes and I feel sad. Like, why didn't I feel comfortable enough to be who I really am? And I think a large part of that was internalized homophobia. So growing up, you know, that's the one thing, like growing up when we grew up, like in the early 2000s, like it was incredibly homophobic. Oh, it was yes. like any negative thing in the world was that's gay. Mm-hmm. Any weak, like just anything like abnormal was you're being gay. And that language permeates your entire psyche. And you think to yourself, I don't want to be like that. Like, I don't want to be gay. So that's how I always felt. I was like, I do not want to be gay. And I'm not going to give this feeling that I have any sort of oxygen. Mm. But then you can only do that for so long. Mm. So year after year, it started to kind of like build more. And then, you know, I completely stopped any sort of relationships with girls because I didn't want to be lying to them. Mm. And there were some, you know, I had a couple of relationships that went away and I really cared about the girls, but I also knew like it's not a romantic partnership. Yeah, exactly. Right. So after college is when I finally came out. And actually, speaking of alcohol, I kind of had a moment where I realized, oh, I'm using alcohol to like kind of like numb some of these feelings that I have. And I was just partying a lot, like 21 years old. I was going out like every night to like mm-hmm. bars, wherever. And realizing, oh, I'm not being truthful to who I am. And that's when I fully decided, okay, like I'm going to come out, started telling my friends, started telling my family. And then my life changed. Like I just felt like this huge boulder lifted off of me.
Wow.
And it was transformative. It was really incredible. And my whole life got better. When I started to be honest about who I was. And then I think back, I'm like, why didn't I do that earlier?
Yeah.
That's why I look at Gen Z now and I'm like, it's so awesome that they feel comfortable enough to be who they really are mm-hmm. at a young age.
Well, I think people like yourself paved the way, you know, because in the way we grew up,
yeah.
it wasn't normal. So being able to step right. into that, I literally was thinking about you. I'm like, this dude really has a PhD in overcoming adversity. Like I can't imagine. No, seriously. Yeah. Like I can't imagine. And same thing to you know, my boy,
yeah.
Living that way and not being able to really be your true authentic self and then stepping into that space and being like, you know what? F that.
Yeah.
This is who I am. Let me ask you this. Was at any point, did anybody who was close to you cut you off? Because I think for people, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You almost think that like, you know, your whole life is going to change and people aren't going to talk to you. And like my boy, he literally asked me, he's like, you don't care? Yeah. I'm like, my brother.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do. Like, yeah. you don't have, exactly. that doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. You love him for who he is.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Who he is gay. So you have to, yeah. I mean, I didn't have anybody, I didn't have anybody cut me off, at all. But yeah. And I think maybe if there were some people who, I didn't hang out with as much, then like, that's fine. Right. I mean, it is what like, and also we don't know who's fighting their own battles mm-hmm. out there. And I'm a big believer that the people who are really homophobic are secretly internally battling their own mm. demons and potentially, you know, we hate in others what we hate in ourselves.
Mm.
And I really do think that that some people who aren't secure with themselves or they don't, you know, they hate that they have maybe some same sex attraction
right.
will actually be the most outspoken about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're actually telling it on yourself when you're right. when you're being homophobic or right. or whatever. So no, I've been definitely really lucky with the people in my life.
No, man, I'm grateful for you sharing
absolutely
you know, sharing the journey with us. And kudos to you, man, for yeah. being able
and,
to
and by the way, this can happen at any age too.
Right. Oh, 100%.
I know people who in their 30s and their 40s have come out
married so, men who
yeah.
you know make that
yeah
just I don't know yeah. what's the word a life of
yeah, well, I think
it's
maybe,
not an adjustment, but like,
well,
you
the,
know,
well, here's the thing. The adjustment is being open about who they really are.
Right.
And if you're not, the bottom line is like secrets are what kind of kill us. And it's not it's like we don't know how long we have on this planet. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Just be honest about who you are and, right. and it'll all be better. It really will. Mm-hmm. As cliche as that sounds, it will, you know, dealing with secrets really mm-hmm. that can eat away at you.
Mm. The year 2001, right?
Yeah.
We had 9/11.
Yeah.
You were talking off air before, and now we're going to transition to you
yes.
know, how you kind of got into TV.
Yeah.
Tell us about when you were listening to Elvis Duran.
Yep.
And I just think it's super. So I actually listened every single day in high school to Elvis Duran and the
yeah.
Morning Show.
I think we all did.
I mean, who yeah. didn't? And yeah. I literally,
my car ride wasn't the same.
I know.
If I didn't listen to Elvis Duran.
Yeah.
So you obviously have a personal relationship with Elvis now, just being in the same world. But tell us about that moment for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just to give everybody a little context, there's a bumper sticker with the Z100 New York sign on it. So I was commenting on it. So when 9/11 happened, I was 11. And I was, you know, at school, like we all were in
seventh-ish grade.
Yeah. Seventh grade.
Yeah.
And I just will never forget that day. And you know, the aftermath was horrific. And I was watching I just consumed everything. I was obsessed with watching the news and watching the coverage of it, which probably looking back was not great that we all just watched that constantly, like on a loop.
Yeah.
But I will never forget the next day listening to Elvis Duran in the Z Morning Zoo, and listening to kids, to parents, to just family members calling in, talking about their experiences, talking about, you know, like I remember there was this one girl who called in and said, you know, my dad called me from the roof of the North Tower, and, you know, we haven't heard from him since. And, you know, if he's listening, you know, we're looking for you. Just like really visceral, but it was also, you know, really powerful to hear Elvis and, you know, the other co-hosts, like kind of helping New York through this traumatic moment. Mm-hmm. And it left a mark on me, and it made me it's something that I thought about from time to time. So fast forward, maybe like 12, 13 years, I'm a producer at ABC News. And my colleague, Dan Harris, who's one of the anchors of Nightline, I was producing for Nightline at the time. He was talking to me about wanting to do a story on Elvis Duran. And I told him, I was like, I am a huge Elvis Duran fan. I listened to his show growing up every single day. And then I said, like, you know, I'd love to produce this segment. So we go to Elvis's house. We go to the show. We, you know, followed him around for the day, just filming him and kind of getting inside of his world. And then we became friends, and he's just an incredible human being. But I said to Dan Harris, I said, we have to ask Elvis about the September 12th, 2001 broadcast. Mm. And Dan said, oh, okay. And so he asked Elvis during the interview. So just to rewind a little bit, producer's job is finding kind of like nuggets of the story that's going to really kind of reveal something in the interview. And you're helping the anchor or the correspondent kind of like come up with some ideas, come up with some details. It's a collaboration. But Dan said, okay, great. So he asks Elvis during the interview, and Elvis broke down. You know, he just started crying, and he just started reliving that experience. Mm-hmm. And it was powerful because it was just kind of, you know, it was, I think for Elvis, he said, you know, there are times in radio, there are times in any job where you start to kind of think, okay, what am I doing here? And that broadcast was when he realized, you know, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm doing mm-hmm. this. So yeah, it was a powerful moment.
Yeah, that's impactful, man.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the OGs at that time. I mean, you had Scary, which is
Scary there. Jones, yeah.
Danielle, Carolina Bermudez at the time.
Yes.
Greg T. I listen to
Frat Boy, Greg T, the Frat
Boy.
Yeah.
I listen to these guys every single morning.
The birthdays.
Horoscopes every day.
Yes. Horoscopes. Yeah, right. Exactly. And there's, remember that guy, John Bell?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, it was good.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know.
Jogging my memory here.
Yeah.
So was that a pivotal moment for you? Do you remember back then in 2001, like wanting to like step into that TV space? Was that the moment, or was there a different moment in your life that you can recall where you're like, wow, you know what? This was more. I just had a guest on who owns Pax Romana in White Plains.
Okay.
Shout out Paulie Russo. If you haven't been to that restaurant,
I gotta go.
So he knew when he was four what he wanted to do. And he was like, I was at Disneyland. Like he had this whole like prolific memory of like wanting to be in the hospitality space. Whereas for me, that happened when I was like 15, 16 years old. But for you, was there a time that you remember where you were like, I want to do that?
You know, I don't know if it was exactly TV, but I definitely knew that I wanted to be a journalist. I knew that from a pretty young age. I don't remember exactly when, to be quite honest. Although I do think I loved TV like my whole life. And I think I also maybe thought about like being an actor or something just because I was like, oh, it would be so much fun to, you know, be like the center of attention.
Right.
Like I always kind of liked being the center of attention a little bit. but I definitely through high school, that's when I started to kind of get involved in like the newspaper. And then I, when I got to college, like my freshman year of college, I was 17 because, you know, we have late birthdays. And I started working at we had a daily student newspaper, the Washington Square News, at NYU. And I started, I was a reporter there, like a writer there. And I loved it. Like the first week that I was there, there was this like bomb scare on campus, which like is ridiculous. But like I immediately was like went into reporter mode and everybody's like,
how do you feel right
now? Yeah, no, but everybody's like running away. And I started going like towards the scene and like the police tape. And I started like asking questions and I got out my notebook and I started writing down details and I started interviewing people.
So that was the moment.
Well, that was like, yeah, that was probably like my first real like story. And I also knew that this would be good for me rising up at the paper because I had just gone to the orientation the day before. So in my head, I was like, oh, news story on campus. So I did all that, you know, reporting, which actually kind of was. And then I went right to the newsroom and I talked to the editor in chief. And I was like, you know, I'm a freshman. And I told him what happened and I like gave him the information. He's like, all right, write up a story. So I had a story the next day in the paper and like seeing your name like in print and seeing your report, like there's something so cool about that. Mm-hmm. And it was a bug kind of that mm-hmm. I got. So I started, you know, writing for the paper and then I became an editor, worked my way up. And, the next year was 2008, we had the presidential election, Obama versus McCain. Wow. So I covered that, extensively. I would go to the college Democrats and then I would go to the college Republicans and I would get quotes on both sides and I would, you know, file my stories. And I loved it. It was so interesting. And I always loved politics. I always loved world events. So this was a way for me to be, you know, in it. And but also be communicating facts and information. Like I'm a big believer in the press and important real reporting mm-hmm. and giving context and giving information. So yeah, that kind of started me off on this journey in journalism.
I mean, and now you've been anybody who listened to the bio before, you got some incredible names behind you. Somebody like a Diane Sawyer, though, right? What makes her so great from your lens, right? Like, I know what I see, and obviously her ability to tell a story and get something out of somebody. But from you being in that circle, or even like an Elvis Duran, what is it that makes them so great in their space?
I think attention to detail is a big one with Diane. I mean, I'll never forget going into her office for the first time for story meetings about, so just to rewind a little bit, we did a huge story, The Hidden America Inside Rikers Island. And I was recruited to be on this producing team. And it was led by this amazing producer, Claire Weinraub. And she has worked with Diane for a long time. And she was kind of amassing this team together. I had done one other story with Diane before in Chicago, but that story I was like much more junior. I was like a production assistant. Mm-hmm. But for this story at Rikers Island, I was producing. And Claire really wanted help finding characters, finding people who we could spotlight inside Rikers. So I started just going to Rikers. Like, you know,
are you scared?
Honestly, it's weird because when you're, for me at least, like I do love the adrenaline of being inside some of these places. And and it's scary in the sense that you're just kind of like, wow, this exists. But I didn't feel personally scared. Also, we have, you know, there are people with us. We're not just like on our own. Although I did narrowly avoid getting splashed. I don't know if you know what that means.
What's that?
It's when, so we were doing a lot of reporting inside the solitary confinement area. So it's when the inmates like piss into their, and they like, they shove it into the door and like throw it inside. Like, and literally I was filming and it like narrowly.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was gross. But I have to say, I also met like incredible people inside mm-hmm. Rikers. There were, you know, we followed these corrections officers who have really difficult jobs, and they try to, you know, they want to treat these inmates with respect. Some of them do that job better than others. But then I met some inmates who this one guy I'll never forget. His name is Talon Murphy. His nickname is Bam Bam. And I was just kind of chatting with lots of different people. And I met him and I just thought I immediately went back to Claire and I was like, this guy's, his story is incredible. His sister was killed in gang violence in Harlem. She was like a really up and coming basketball star. And he had a really fascinating story. So we ended up following him for a while. And yeah, so it was heartbreaking because then he ended up getting charged and he's now in prison. Mm-hmm. But it was really like that's working with Diane was incredible because I saw her attention to detail and just the way she every single fact needs to be checked. And she asks such fascinating questions. And just sitting in her office, you just get that, like you feel the presence and you feel like you're with somebody who's at the top of their game.
And for so long.
And there's a reason why she's
right
who she is. It's because she works harder than just about anybody else.
To the interview piece now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I get the feeling here when I'm able to like, when I know certain stories and I'm able to ask challenging questions, yep. right? But when you're in the thick of the moment, right? The Orlando Pulse nightclub
yeah.
shooting.
Yeah.
Las Vegas, you covered too with the hotel mass shooting.
Yeah,
right?
The Route 91 country music festival.
Right. Okay. So these are impactful moments.
Yeah.
And now you go in during the actual height of this scene and this moment, and you talk to people who are living it in that moment. What does that feel like for you? And what's the hardest part about that? Because that cannot yeah. be easy.
Yeah, Pulse. I'll go back to Pulse. That was 2016. And I'll never, ever forget that story because the night before I was out at a gay bar until 4 a.m. with my friends, you know, having a blast. So I get home at like 4:30.
Where were you? In New York?
I was in Williamsburg. I was in Brooklyn.
So you flew out.
Yeah, I was at a bar until 4:30. So I get home at like 4:30, like shit faced, go to bed. And then at 7 a.m., I get woken up from my executive producer who I see her name on the phone and I'm like, what's going on? It's Sunday morning. And she's like, hey, I need you to go to Orlando like now, like you need to get on a plane right now. And I was just like, you know, I was hungover and I was like, wait, what? Why? What? Like, I didn't know what was going on. She was like, 50 people have just been murdered at a gay bar. You need to go. We need you on the ground there. So it's like my stomach just sank. And I just thought, oh, my God, like. A, this is like on a human level horrific. B, this is my community that has been targeted. And C, like, oh shit, I gotta get to Orlando. I remember being on the plane, like, you know, you're so excited for the doors. You just want to get off the plane. Like, that was the first and only time that I've ever been like, can we be delayed? Like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go meet, you know, these family, because we interviewed family members. We interviewed people who were like this one woman who we interviewed who I'm still in touch with. She actually just texted me this morning and invited me to her wedding.
Wow.
Which I hopefully can go. She's incredible. Her name is Tiara. And she was there with her cousin at Pulse nightclub. That's the thing. So it wasn't just gay people, gay men. It was all different types of people, because all people love gay bars because they're fun. Mm-hmm. And she was there with her 18-year-old cousin who had been shot. And she was literally laying in the bathroom stall with all these dead bodies. And the gunman came in kind of looking to see who else was there, who else he could kill. And she had her eyes wide open to basically pretend that she was dead and looked at the gunman in the face as he went scanned through to see who else he could kill. And he didn't kill her, but she was over the dead body of her cousin. So we interviewed her like right afterwards, and she showed us the shirt that she had had with, which had bullet holes all in it. I still remember the smell of her shirt because it was covered in blood. Like, it was so horrific. And I was with Juju Chang, who's an incredible anchor at ABC News. And we just like, you know, sobbed. And yeah, you have moments like that doing journalism where you see the worst, you see some of the best aspects of humanity, mm-hmm. and you see some of the worst, and you see just what people, you know, just also, you know, the resilience that people have and their ability to, you know, to tell their story, because telling your story is powerful. So the worst thing in the world can happen, and we as journalists get sent there and we're, you know, meeting people kind of at the lowest moment in their life. Like when you lose a child to gun violence, for example. But if you can tell the world about your loved one, that's powerful. Mm. That person's memory will live on. And there is a sense of catharsis in that. And it's a real privilege to be able to do that. But it's also intense because you're kind of taking on that emotion and you know, it's heartbreaking. But I do think it's important. It's important to bear witness to events that are happening in history. And it's important to get those stories out for people to see.
Yeah, man. I mean, what you guys do is you're front line. You know, it's frontline, whether you're in front of the camera, behind the camera, writing the story, whatever it is. And also you're providing a story to the world. Yeah. But I'm sitting here thinking about like the level of compassion and empathy you have to have in that moment. But also like I'm here to get this job done.
Right.
And that has to be there's got to be a real, I don't know. I mean, just the relationship between those two seems very difficult. And then you see, like, even in war, what's going on now. Like,
I mean,
then journalists get caught up in a lot of this stuff, and now they become hostages, right?
Yeah.
Prisoners of war, basically, just off of trying to tell a story. Do you ever get fearful of stuff like that?
Yeah. So, the work I've been doing recently, it's less kind of conflict based. In 2021, I was working at CNN after ABC. I covered the Vegas shooting when I was at CNN, and I did a few more stories that were really intense. And I just decided, okay, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to leave TV news.
Was that because of the depth of the emotions behind stuff too?
A bit. Yeah, that was part of it. I will never forget. I met with the director of the Patriots documentary that I ended up working on as a producer in June of 2021. And it was right around the time of that condo collapse in Surfside, Florida, in Miami, where...
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was horrible.
I remember that.
Nice
condo too, and it just collapsed.
Yeah, it collapsed. Yes. And like, you know, it's horrific.
Right.
And I remember seeing it, reading about it, and thinking to myself, I don't want to go there. I don't want to cover the story. I don't want to interview these survivors. I don't want to interview these family members who've lost loved ones. I don't want to go. And in that moment, I also realized like, well, that's not necessarily how a reporter should be thinking. So maybe it is time for me to move on. Maybe it is time for me to do something different. So I met with Matt, the director, and I said, you know, I'm really ready to get into documentaries. I'd rather tell the story of the Surfside, you know, condo collapse like years later when we've had a little bit more time to reflect. I don't necessarily want to be on the scene anymore for breaking news. So that was kind of a decision that I came to in 2021. I worked on the Patriots documentary series for about a year and a half. And it was really great because it's a different type of storytelling.
Right.
And there's so much out there. There's so much. There's so many interesting human stories to tell. And not everything needs to be. We don't have to do everything. Like, we can kind of choose different lanes, and maybe one day I'll decide that I do want to go back to doing this type of work. But I think for me in that moment, I needed to a little bit of a break.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I want to touch on the business side of things. When you're leaving a job, like it was ABC first, right?
Yeah. ABC from 2011 through 2017.
Yep.
And then CNN after that.
You still maintain very good relationships, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the tactic and strategy for somebody in business who's just looking to, you know, get that next opportunity, next job? How did you navigate that? Those are two incredible companies that you're working for. And to be able to maintain, you know, a good relationship with both of them even years later, there's something to be said about obviously how you handled that. So just in business in general, what are some of the tactics that you've kind of implemented along the way as you transition jobs?
Planning. I'm not impulsive. Like I can be impulsive, like with things in life. Like I change my mind all the time. But when it comes to your job and, you know, your livelihood, you have to plan in advance. So you can't just decide, oh, I'm up. I'm a firm believer. You never, ever quit a job before you have something lined up because you don't know what's going to happen next. And I'm freelancing now. So I had a 2-month period this summer where I didn't have a job lined up. And that was like a really insecure feeling for me. It was like, oh my God, am I going to ever make money again? But you have to remember that, the most important thing is your integrity is also your reputation. Mm-hmm. So if people see you as somebody who's just kind of a flake, like that's not going to be good for, mm-hmm. you know, your next opportunity. So when I left ABC News, I knew for probably like 8 months that I wanted something different. And I was under a contract too. So I was trying to like time it out in the right way. And then the CNN opportunity came up. So I took that. And then at the end of my CNN experience where I thought, okay, I'm in 2021. I was like, okay, I'm ready to do something different. I just started really like, you know, casting a wide net, reaching out to people I used to work with, friends, which is a weird thing sometimes. I think it's not the easiest thing to reach out to ask for help, but it's important because if nobody knows that you're interested in trying something else, they're not just going to reach out to you and say, hey, Chris, I'm doing this documentary. Like, you know, you have to be proactive. Mm-hmm. So I think planning is huge. And it's like, you know, just even in like my Apple Notes, like I'm constantly like just writing little like ideas down, like, okay, maybe reach out to this person, like, look into this thing, whatever it is, and really trying to plan in advance what you want to do next.
And I want to believe, you know, at least 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, people who genuinely care for you, if you're working for them and their organization and you get a better job opportunity and you've been a great employee and a great friend along the way, they're going to want to support you. You know, like I know for me, we have turnover all the time and, you know, we get a lot of even good young part timers, you know, but this is not their full time job. And, you know, we got to send them on their way. We've had commissioners who have gotten, you know, different opportunities and we just send them on their way and wish them the best. So I think there's a level of fear, unnecessary fear behind that. But the reality is if you're working inside a good organization, the majority of the time people are going to support your growth as an individual. And I think that's an important message, obviously, for everybody to understand who's trying to transition somewhere.
Absolutely. And it's being honest too. It's honest up until a point,
right?
Like
right.
You don't want to also reveal all your cards. You have to know when to keep your mouth shut.
Yep.
You're getting a paycheck, so don't rock the boat too. Like you really do have to be strategic,
right?
And make sure that you're not messing up anything for yourself by,
right,
you know, by putting the cart before the horse or anything like that.
Are you looking to elevate your brand with captivating visuals and immersive sound? Look no further than the home of the No Snooze podcast, Kai Visions Productions, your go-to destination for cutting-edge audio and video production. At Kai Visions, we don't just create content. We create experiences that leave a lasting impact. From podcasts, YouTube variety shows, sleek corporate videos, to attention-grabbing promotional campaigns, our team of experts is dedicated to turning your vision into reality. Choose Kai Visions for a production experience like no other. It's time to make your brand known. Contact us today at kaivisions@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Kai Visions. Kai Visions Productions, where audiovisual excellence meets innovation. Now, back to the Epi.
I got to ask in terms of Tom Brady, so you've had direct contact while you were shooting the Dynasty with Tom, right?
Yep.
Give me something about him on a personal level.
I was just really impressed by his work ethic. I mean, it is unbelievable when you think about somebody who was the 199th pick in the draft in the year 2000 and was the fourth string quarterback. What he was able to do, it's truly mind-blowing and inspiring for anybody on a human level. And to me, what it says is it's all about the level of work that you put in.
Right.
This was a kid who loved going to practice. Like, what kid loves going to practice? Mm-hmm. But he would tell his dad, like, take me back out. Like, let's hit the, you know, I want to keep throwing the ball. I always want to perfect the spiral. He just so dedicated to all aspects of training. And some of the things that are very unsexy. Like, I don't think people want to continue just like those drills and running, but everybody we interviewed just talked about how he would be at the Patriots facility at all hours. Sometimes he would sleep there.
4 a.m.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I learned a lot just actually kind of, you know, studying him and telling his story and being a part of the team You know, I got to meet his parents, who are unbelievable, and his sister Nancy, and Tom himself. Like, he shook everybody's hand. You know, in the crew, he was just like, seemed like a really genuine guy. And I was really impressed by him.
That's awesome. It's awesome to hear. Did you guys interview Rodney Harris at all?
Rodney Harrison. I absolutely loved him.
So yeah. Rodney Harrison, he told one of the best Tom Brady stories I think I've ever heard in terms of depicting Tom's work ethic. And basically, Rodney was, I don't know if he was a veteran, but at that time he'd obviously,
he was a vet.
So the way he tells it, he's like, you know, one day I basically come into the weight room and like Tom's there. And this was probably like at like 7 a.m. in the morning, right? So then the next day, Rodney's like, oh, like I'm going to get this dude. So he shows up at like 6:15. Tom was there. So then the next day, he basically shows up at like 5 a.m. Tom Brady now is walking out of the gym with a towel on his shoulder, pats Rodney on the on the shoulder, and basically big times him like, yo, this is a new leaf now, and walks into the parking lot and leaves. So like Rodney the whole time is trying to beat him there. And then finally he shows up earlier than anybody and Tom Brady's still leaving at like 5 a.m. And it was one of the best stories ever. And they said that that year was the transition year that then the Patriots, you know, started to take off. But what an incredible journey. I mean, and then Belichick, did you work with Belichick as well?
Yeah. So basically as a producer, my job was reading tons of books about Belichick, the team. I got to kind of study Belichick, and you know, his favorite book is The Art of War. So he's somebody who's so defensively minded. He understands strategy better than anybody else. And you also see his story too. He's another one who was really, I think he was kind of undervalued for a long time. After the 1999 season, he left the Jets. And a lot of people were kind of like good riddance, Belichick, you know, whatever. And look at him now. I mean, he's the greatest.
The GOAT.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, it's amazing how, you know, him and Tom actually kind of had that parallel track in a sense of people kind of undervaluing them, like not necessarily seeing their full potential. Mm-hmm. And look who had the last laugh.
We're going to switch to relationship stuff.
Yeah.
We were talking off air and, you know, you met your husband in a very intentional time in your life. You know, we kind of were speaking and you got all, you know, the 20s out of you, the fun stuff that needed to be done. That was all done. How do you now in your marriage show up and remain intentional? What's the foundation for you guys for a successful marriage?
I think friendship and genuine love of being around each other is huge. And at the end of the day, he's the person that I want to spend the most time with, just period. So it makes life so much easier when, you know, that person is actually, you know, your life partner, your spouse, because, we're in it together. He's like my teammate. And you know, it sounds so corny, but it really is true.
It doesn't sound corny.
No, I know. It's like, you know, I think, sometimes you start to think about like life just in this way of like, you know, there's a lot of the older we get, I'm starting to realize like, oh yeah, every year is probably going to get like a little bit more difficult. Just how it is. Yep. Especially in the world we're living in right now, there's so much, sadness, there's so much pain. But if you can have people around you who are supporting you, who are lifting you up, who, you know, you want to support, who you want to lift up, who, you know, you just feel like there's that kind of like bond. It's like you hold on to that. And I felt that with Anthony immediately, like on our first date. Like I actually texted one of my friends and said, like, this is the first guy I've ever met who I could see myself marrying. So I was I really knew right away. He actually didn't. Like, so I had to be patient because he was going through you know, a really tumultuous time in his life especially with work. Like work was really intense, and sometimes you meet people and you're both kind of in different, you know, you're in different kind of like emotional states. You have different bandwidths in terms of what you can handle. And I tried to be as patient as I possibly could, but at the same time being like, like, I'm super into you. I want this to work. And I kind of was, one of my friends, so I was at a stage too, where I was also like getting really frustrated with guys that I was dating. And I was ready to just kind of like call it quits. I was ready to just kind of pull the plug and say, like, all right, like you don't want to, you know, you want to switch plans on me at the last, like, you know, little mm-hmm. things like that would yep. kind of like set me off. And I talked to my, one of my really close friends, Meredith, and, she helped me like craft this like long text to him where I just like really laid all my cards out on the table. And I said, you know, I really like you a lot. I want to continue this, but if, you know, if you don't really see a future, like that's totally fine. And then he wrote me this long ass text back, just like really, yep. you know, wearing his heart on his sleeve, right. and telling me exactly where he was at. And it was like, you realize sometimes if you're vulnerable, like that's actually how you can progress in life. Like you can't just have this like veneer of like, oh, like I'm so tough. Like I don't, but like you do need to be honest about what you want. Mm-hmm. And I think with marriage now, it's like, yeah, being honest and having uncomfortable conversations sometimes, but also like, you know, remembering this is the person that is most important to me. And there are some days where like, you know, I'm in a shitty mood and I don't want to, I don't know. It's like, you know, those moments where like, you're just in a, like, you kind of just want to like mouth off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, no. Like I can't do that. Like, it's not fair for me to like mm-hmm. take out my shit on Anthony. So it's like, I try to like, just tell myself like, you know, no, like go take a walk, like go do whatever you need to do.
Well, that's music. Because of the phase that you're in right now, because yeah. of the emotional intelligence that is obviously there. But like, you know, I think it's a critical time because, you know, for me, obviously, you know, my situation, when you come up with somebody from such a young age, you go through all those mistakes together.
Yeah.
Whereas like now at our age, there's a different level of intention. You know, the growth phase has kind of already happened. So it's great. I mean, I'm so happy for you, man.
Thank you.
Honestly, it's not corny. It's a beautiful thing to hear.
No, I'm glad.
So congratulations to you guys. I had something else for you that I wanted to touch on. Oh, I'd be remiss not to tell this story. But so when we were away in Puerto Rico, when we met, we had come back and, you know, we had started like a whole group chat.
Oh, yeah.
So I had mentioned Chris James and the crew on the very first episode of the No Snooze podcast.
It's amazing.
And I sent that podcast to you to listen to it, to give me feedback, obviously, from your expertise, which you provided. And you were a very instrumental in me like starting this project because I remember saying to you guys, I'm going to text you mother effers every single morning for 6 months. And if I do that, I'm going to start a podcast. That sounds so random, right? It's so random. But I'm sitting here now, 175 episodes later, with you.
It's incredible. And you did it, by the way. I mean, you literally texted us Monday through Friday.
Yes. But
every day you'd be, you know, we would get long texts and blessings and booty.
That's right.
And it was,
that's right.
It was, I mean, it was really like a testament to you and the person you are and the, you know, you're a man of your word. You said you were going to do it and you did it. And you, you know, you spread such positivity to people and it comes so naturally to you. And I know you work at it. I know it's not something that every day, like you said, mm-hmm. you know, some days, you know, you didn't want to wake up and go to the gym and do all the things that you're doing, but you were committed to it. And, look at the community you've built now. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, thank you, my brother. But it was so funny, man, because back then I remember like sending, so I would be on this and I still get on this, like it's the highest I've ever been right after I work out, right? That those endorphins, the creativity is sparked. At that time, I remember sitting in the sauna, reading my 10 pages and then coming and creating this text message for you guys. And some days I wouldn't even get a response back.
Because
it was so early in the morning and these guys are like, yo, he's sending me a whole book right now.
Oh, yeah. There were some days where I felt bad because I was like, oh, God, Dave put a lot of work into this.
But, I'm not even reading
it. But also there were some days where I'd read it and I'd be like, fuck that. Like, you know, I'm in my own kind of haze of like feeling however I'm feeling. And I'd be like, I can't even read this because it's too positive. Like, you know, but here's the thing. Like, it's important because what you're doing is also like, you're showing that there is, you don't have to be in this rut.
Right.
You can actually overcome some mm-hmm. of these things. And, And it was great. I mean, I also miss that crew. I mean, I we need to have a reunion.
We should have a reunion.
Yeah.
That'll be a good time. No drinking, though.
No, well, listen.
Maybe we could drink.
Yeah, exactly.
If you do it, I'll do it. Yeah. Right? I typically like to ask this of men in general. Where do you want to get better as a man in your own journey, your own life?
I think really getting to a place where I'm able to regulate some of my emotions in a kind of a more constructive way, because there are times where I do get really, really overwhelmed with just things that I can't control. So right now, especially, like, I'm just fully obsessed with what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening in Gaza. And like this morning, I read this New Yorker article about an emergency room physician who went to go volunteer in Gaza for 2 weeks, and just, you know, talking about just the horror that she's seeing, and it literally impacts me on such a deep level. And I want to figure out, okay, how do I channel this sadness and this rage over injustice that I'm seeing? How do I channel that in an appropriate way, in a way that's actually going to make some meaningful change? And I also feel like it's for me, at least, I get really I have like mild ADHD. Sometimes it's more severe, actually. And recently I've been really struggling with it, where I just want to consume everything. And I'm like, like looking in a million different directions. And it's like, no. Like, the only way to really kind of make any sort of progress is to be strategic, is to kind of like take things one step at a time. And I don't know, I would love to like really get to a point where I feel like I'm making more of a meaningful change in the world, and helping to at least kind of like in my own mind get to a place where I feel like I'm doing that in a kind of more specific way, as opposed to just like taking all the things in and feeling a bit hopeless, because I've been struggling with that a little bit recently, just feeling kind of like pessimistic in a way that I haven't before. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually such an optimistic person,
right.
You know, it's easy to kind of get defeated by things that you see happening that you don't have control over. So that's something that, like, I'm really thinking about a lot, and I'm hoping to do more to regulate that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I struggle with that, because I almost, and you might not like this, but very strategically, I almost turn a blind eye to world issues, because I feel like, one, I have so many issues that are going on in my own personal life, yeah, on a selfish level. But then also, I feel like even at home, like, and home being like our states and our country, yeah, even on a local level, yeah, we have so many issues that are going on. And like, I struggle with like almost being like, you can't help everybody. Like, we have to take care. We got a lot of shit going on here.
Yep.
But also, when you see what's going on from a humanity level, you're like, how can you turn a blind eye to it?
I think with Gaza specifically, the reason why it's impacted me on such a deep level is because I know that my tax dollars are literally paying for the bombs that are being dropped on hospitals and refugee camps. And I'm not okay with that. So that's why, for me personally, like, this issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, you know, my elected officials.
It is an issue, right?
Yeah, my elected officials that I'm voting for. Like, you know, like, so that's where I'm just kind of like, okay. Yeah. I need to channel this in a productive way, and I don't necessarily know how to do it yet. Mm.
Do you think you will do it? Sorry to cut you off. But yeah. Do you think you'll do it through a media outlet? Like, is that what you're?
I don't. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe I can really start to, because I have been posting a lot. I've been, I was at a protest this past weekend where I was doing photography, which I love photography, because I think that you can really tell stories in pictures. And I was like documenting. Actually, I met this amazing Hasidic Jewish guy who was there, Free Palestine sign up. And he was just saying to me, he was like, I don't support this. Like, yes, I'm Jewish, but like, I don't support what's going on.
Right.
And I thought that was so powerful, because it's a symbol too, a photo. You see a photo of somebody and you look at their eyes and you just see like humanity. Like, I do think that human beings, like, we're incredible. And we contain multitudes, and we have the power to really, inform, inspire, and show that there's a different way. So I'm hoping to really kind of, you know, do more in that vein.
And this is a tough question. How do you respond to people who say that the media's job is to portray like negativity and to spark argument and spark debate, which to a level I'm sure it is. But also when you have moments like that and somebody takes a picture and you're a Hasidic Jew in Free Palestine, that's a powerful moment and that's going to be in history. How do you like answer that question from somebody who asks like, well, why does media, you know, portray such negative stories?
I mean, I think there is a base kind of human thing where we're more drawn to stories that make us feel something. So even if it's like a positive emotion, positive, negative, whatever it is, that's going to be the thing that goes viral. Like, so if you're on social media, mm-hmm. like when you look at some of like the dog cat videos, like they have like millions and millions and millions right. of views because it's something that inspires that feeling of like positivity. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, when you see, you know, outrage moments, like the person at the airport who's having the meltdown, which I actually have a huge issue with those videos.
Oh,
because,
God. Yeah. People punching each other.
Yeah. But like even, you know, there was like this woman on the airplane who's like, you know, was like flipping everybody off. And I'm like, this is somebody who's likely having a serious mental health episode crisis right now. And like, I just hate that that's our first reaction now is like take out our phone and film mm-hmm. a viral video. And I do believe 100% that the media exploits that for clicks. Mm-hmm. And I am very against that. So I also think that, you know, you need people in the room at all of these networks, at all of these websites to say, hey, let's talk about mental health. Let's have a conversation about, you know, how we best respond when you see someone who's clearly going through a really terrible moment that they might not even remember mm-hmm. the next day, and their face is going to be all over the world. Like, I think about the human level of that every time I report on a story. So I do understand exactly what you're saying. And I think that it's something that we need to take a serious look at and also look in the mirror and say, well, what are the things that we're consuming?
Mm-hmm. 100%. Best advice you've ever received in your life?
That's a really, really good question.
For me, it's been so simple. And I have it on my work phone as the tagline, but you are your only limit. Mm. And it's not only a personal quote that I live by, but it's also the best advice that I've ever received because I've been in moments where I cripple myself, you know, and I intentionally don't do things, but I'm the only one that's continuing to limit myself. You know, like even with silly stuff, with like putting out some content, if I'm in a bad mood, it's like, I'm not going to put out the content. Like, I'm holding myself back, you know? So I think for us as individuals, you know, you can have all the naysayers in the world, but it's not really going to take root unless you become that limiting factor for yourself. And I think everybody can really relate to that.
Yeah.
But it's a simple thing. But I think that's become for me the best advice that I've really ever
received. Yeah. No, I think just, and it's not even like a quote or anything, but, you know, just value every day, because, you know, like I'm so lucky. I have such incredible friends. I have such incredible people in my life and family. I do love life. I love living life. I love doing things. And, on days where, you're kind of just like, ugh, like, I don't want to go do this thing, like do the thing,
mm-hmm.
go get up, go out. Go see go just do a small thing for somebody, even if it's like sending a text message, like, or picking up the phone and calling a friend that you haven't talked to in a long time, like mm-hmm. just really valuing like all of the things that we have, because it's a lot. Like we're so lucky, even if, like, you know, we're sitting here being able to talk, we're sitting you know, in New York or wherever it's just think about all of the great things that we have, and just like just really valuing every single day, because we don't know when our last day is going to be. We don't know. And it's like, you know, you really just don't sweat the small, and don't sweat the small stuff. That's a great quote.
Great book.
Yeah. Oh, is it a book?
You haven't read it?
No.
Oh, my brother, you got to read it.
Okay. All right.
I mean, the best toilet read ever. Each chapter is a page.
Really?
Oh, it's, and the words are huge. It's like,
I love it.
It's the best. But it gives little you know, if you're sitting in traffic, how, you know, you have to be mindful that maybe that traffic is caused because a little baby just lost her mom in an accident.
100%.
But for you, you're 15 minutes late to your meeting. Which one would you rather? Like, it's like real tangible stuff. Great book.
Love it. Yeah. And that's truly something that that we just as all human beings, like we need to constantly be remembering that, you know, it's not just about you. Mm-hmm. We live in a, you know, it's like care about other people. Just and when someone's lashing out, like honking at you, just be like, you know, that sucks that this person is having a day where, like, you know, we don't know what happened to them. And maybe they're lashing out and they'll regret it later, or they won't. But like, I'm not going to take that on. Like, just try to.
Yeah, I got a confession. I mean, I strive to be better every day. I've read Don't Sweat the Small Stuff multiple times. Today on my way here, I cursed the school bus out probably four times. I'm like, you're stopping again? Are you crazy? Like, so I.
Oh, yeah. Listen. I'm saying this. And I'm also like saying this to myself.
I know.
Like, calm down.
I know.
Calm down.
Chris, man, I'm very grateful for you.
Likewise.
I you know, it's been some time, obviously, since we've connected, but I'm always rooting for you, man.
Likewise. I'm so proud of you.
I'm proud of you too.
Look at what you've built. I mean, this is pretty impressive. And you, bottom line is your entire story is a testament to work ethic and staying true to your word. And it's really awesome and inspiring.
Listen, I'm inspired by you. I like to keep men like you very close. I'm very intentional about, you know, the men that I keep in my life. And I want to just continue to further this friendship and this relationship.
100%.
If there's anything I can ever do for you to help, please just never hesitate to reach out.
Appreciate it.
Let everybody know where they can connect with you, Chris James.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at Yo Chris James. I'm looking right here. So Instagram is where I'm probably the most active. I mean, I'm always happy to chat. I love being able to just kind of like, you know, just be honest about life and talk about what's going on. And, you know, I don't judge anybody. So, feel free to reach out.
I will say, I'm happy you cut your hair.
Yeah.
I liked the face. I liked it, you know, but this is all clean.
Yeah.
I can relate too, because I grew my hair out.
Yeah.
And like people were telling me, that's not it. It was funny. A vibe though, no, but this is so much more like clean and professional.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like I liked the long hair for a little while, but as soon as I cut it, I thought I was going to miss it and I didn't. So,
well, how could you miss like taking care of it?
It's horrible.
I know.
It's
I got insane. My daughter's hair to take care of. But watch, in a couple of years, I'll probably be like, oh, I wish I had hair. But this beard will always be popping.
There we go.
So, guys, whether you've listened to one episode or 175 with Chris James, we're very grateful for you, the listener. We have one ask in 2024, and that is just to please share the show. It's because of you guys that this show is continuing to root itself and get legs. And we're just so grateful for you guys, the listeners. So thank you. As always, you can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. And until next time, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
Chris James.
Let's go.
My brother. Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at NoSnooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.